Coming to you from the Outer Mission, this is Monkey Block, a storytelling podcast focused on San Francisco's golden past, 1849 through 1906. I'm your host, Girlina. The stories are closely based on newspapers of the time, historical books, and journals. Disclaimer, I do my best to research and share the real stories, extracting legends or calling them out. Now, let's go back in time. What if I told you California was an independent nation? That for a short time, California was a republic. It's true. If you grew up in California, you were taught something about the Bear Flag Revolt. But how much do you really know about the event? Was the Bear Flag Revolt a display of American bravery or a stain on Mexico's California and United States history? It turns out there's nuance to this event and therefore more to consider when it comes to the Bear Flag Revolt. Decades of social perspective and newly gathered information allows researchers to evaluate the additional sources and create an updated opinion that's always hard to do in the moment. The Bear Flag Revolt is a complicated story to tell, and I'm struggling to parse out the interesting and important parts versus the time I have to tell it all. In 1914, Dr. Plantin Mariano Vallejo, that's General Mariano Vallejo's son, wrote, "It is strange indeed how often lies are accepted without examination and go thundering down the ages, while the truth is rejected and disappears." I agree, Dr. Vallejo. The Bear Flag Revolt is a pivotal point in California's history, and the events that led up to the actual revolt are just as complex as the actual event. Today, we take a look at the preceding storylines leading to the Bear Flag Revolt, give some backstory, some subplots, and describe a few main characters in not enough time to tell it all. There's too much to know, so I'll never know all there is to know about this event. Are you ready? Here we go. Early interest in California. In 1841, six expedition vessels reached the San Francisco Bay under the command of Lieutenant Charles Wilkes with special instruction from the U.S. government to
make careful surveys of that harbor.
Around this time, Wade Thompson writes to Secretary of State Daniel Webster, saying,
"The Bay of San Francisco is capacious enough to receive the navies of all the world, while the neighboring forests could supply lumber sufficient to build all the ships of these navies."
Thompson felt California, more than Texas, was worth the United States' effort. And more specifically, he felt the United States should be interested in Alta California for the San Francisco Bay. This is from Robert Glass Cleland's The Early Sentiment for Annexation of California. I have a link to it in my transcript. In June of 1842, Secretary of State Daniel Webster writes a letter back to Wade Thompson, giving Thompson, who was a U.S. government minister to Mexico,
full authority to move forward when he felt the time was right to initiate negotiations with Mexico to cede California or a portion of it, but to proceed cautiously to avoid giving the impression the United States was eager to purchase California.
Good advice. You never want to look desperate in a negotiation. In Webster's letter to Thompson, twice Webster states,
"The St. Francisco port and harbor was the prominent object to be obtained, but if possible, wants the purchase of California,
Alta and Baja,
which would by default include the St. Francisco port and harbor."
The idea was for Mexico to decide on their own, to sell California to the United States to settle its debt. The intention was meant to be peaceful and retain goodwill between the United States and Mexico. I want to point out, in 1842, non-locals know the port and harbor as San Francisco or St. Francisco. Even though Yerba Buena was established previously in 1835 and would not have its name officially changed to San Francisco until 1847 to match the name everyone except locals refer to the area by. Side note, Yerba Buena was a town that was either inside or just outside of the District of San Francisco. And since 1776, the name District of San Francisco was used to describe the entire area surrounding Mission San Francisco de Assis. So San Francisco's original name was not Yerba Buena. But I digress. In 1842, Webster gives Thompson the authority to negotiate the sale of California province. But you know what happens later that same year on October 1842? The accidental annexation of California. Commodore Thomas Ap Catesby Jones mistakenly thinks Mexico has declared war on the United States based on information he received from someone else in the United States government and takes over Monterey, California, mistakenly flying the American flag over Monterey for 24 hours. But since Mexico had not declared war on the United States, this mistake would strain relations between the two countries and delay the United States' plans, that is to say Webster's plan, to peacefully purchase California for a few years, to just let the dust settle on that embarrassing situation. Season 2, Episode 5 is about this accidental annexation of California if you want to know more about this story or revisit this story with a different ear. The Webster-Thompson story is a story we're telling that I don't have time to tell. Short version, a few years later, Webster writes several letters to Thompson asking slash chastising Thompson about why he never thought the time was right to initiate a negotiation for the sale of California after Thompson was given permission to move forward with California negotiations. That had Thompson acted, his actions would have eliminated the accidental annexation snafu with the authority Webster had given him, in addition to totally avoiding the Bear Flag Revolt had the United States gained possession of California in a peaceful manner in 1842. Webster remained angry at the lack of Thompson's actions for many years. There is more to that story, but that's the short version. The importance of this story is it illustrates Yerba Buena, better known as the San Francisco Port and Harbor, as an early reason the United States is interested in California. Actually, it comes up before 1841 a few more times in government documents and letters, but I'm choosing to tell this storyline for its touch point to the Bear Flag Revolt. Thomas Larkin, well situated in Alta, California. Thomas Larkin, or Don Tomas Larkin, is an interesting character in Alta, California history. He arrives in California in 1832 from Massachusetts. Unlike other immigrants arriving from the East Coast, Larkin is less educated and has fewer financial resources or connections compared to the other men arriving from the East Coast. Also interesting, Larkin never becomes a Mexican citizen and never marries into a California family, yet he becomes one of the wealthiest men in Alta California. He adamantly wanted to retain his United States citizenship, and he did. Larkin was well-respected, honest, and trusted by all levels of Californios. He integrates quickly into the society and becomes fluent in Spanish, acting as an interpreter for several of his own business dealings as well as for others. As a successful, well-liked, bilingual businessman, Larkin is made an American consul to Alta California because he is still a United States citizen. In 1842, Larkin writes his sentiments regarding Alta California and Mexico.
I am remarkably well situated with this government and its people. I never meddle seriously in their politics. I never speak against their laws, modes, or religion. In my travels, I have found almost all the peoples have some habits to be praised as well as to blame. They appear to be satisfied with me, and why should I not also be with them?
This is from The Affair at Monterey, October 20th, 21st, 1842, a letter written by Thomas Larkin to his friend Faxton Dean Atherton regarding the accidental annexation of California, where he became the facilitator to Captain Jones realizing Mexico had not declared war on the United States. The importance of this story is it describes Thomas Larkin and his place in Mexico-California history, including the accidental annexation of California. California's sentiments. By 1844, Mexico has neglected the Californias, Alta and Baja, territory for so long that the Californios feel disconnected from Mexico, culturally, financially, and politically. You have some Californios in favor of becoming a part of the United States, some Californios who favor England or France, and some Californios who feel it's best to stay with Mexico. Let's look into that. The rancheros, in general, have an interest in furthering their existing business and desire a more stable government to what they currently have. So rancheros feel the United States will offer the protection and governance currently lacking from Mexico. Not all rancheros, but the majority. And California government officials acting on behalf of Mexico, well, they mostly view staying with Mexico as the best idea. Self-preservation on all sides, no real surprises there. The importance of this story is to point out Californios aren't happy being under Mexican rule, being ignored, or witnessing Mexico's disinterest in developing the Californias, but there are differing opinions on the country of future governing preference. Beginning of the U.S. expansion. Also in 1844, the United States' manifest destiny, that's President Polk's policy stating it was God's will to expand the United States from the Atlantic to the Pacific Ocean, is in full swing, and Californios are watching the westward expansion happen as they are also witnessing the increasing numbers of arriving Americans. Historically, American foreigners entered California, became Mexican citizens, were granted land after a year, adopted the religion, culture, language, lifestyle, and often married into California families. But these new immigrants were entering illegally and staying illegally and openly declaring they have no intention of assimilating to their new country. And that concerned Californios, who found these new foreigners difficult to deal with. The United States immigrants are trekking over the Sierra Nevada and entering Mexico's Alta California, arriving at John Sutter's Fort in New Helvetica, we now call that Sacramento, where they are warmly welcomed. In 1845, six wagon trains arrive at Sutter's Fort. One or two wagon trains in a year won't raise eyebrows, but six in 1 year, added to the United States' westward expansion, and Californios have real concern. The Californios can see what is coming. The signs are there. But this isn't happening how they imagined. Well, Californios, there's a lot more that will happen outside of your expectations. In Season 1, Episode 7, I mention a letter written by Alexander Leidsdorf to Thomas Larkin in 1845 regarding these new foreigners and their Christmas Eve visit to Yerba Buena.
There are several of these new emigration in town, among them one great blackguard, Mr. Sublette.
The short version is on Christmas Eve, a group of the newly immigrated men had arrived at Sutter's Fort a week earlier and now show up in Yerba Buena firing their guns and making a ruckus all through the night and after midnight. Californios are not teetotalers, and they love their three-day fiestas, but they were, in general, not heavy drinkers and typically went to bed by 8 p.m. Celebrations were done respectfully and out in el campo and not in towns. So getting drunk and celebrating after midnight in a pueblo was considered disrespectful and disruptive. The new immigrants had no intention of assimilating or being respectful to their new country, and the Californios found them bothersome. John Sutter, a week before this ruckus, describes this same group this way.
Yesterday, Sublette arrived here with his party of 15 men. Not one company has arrived before to this country which looked as respectable as this.
It's worth mentioning both Sutter and Leidsdorf openly favor a U.S. takeover of California, but their experience with the same group of immigrants differs. The importance of these two stories is to illustrate the change in attitude of arriving immigrants as manifest destiny is underway. Captain John C. Fremont and the Pacific Coast. Also in 1845, Captain John C. Fremont, as a captain with the U.S. Engineers Exploring Expedition, is instructed to travel to the Pacific Coast and quietly take note of California under the guise of scientific research. Fremont was a map maker, so out of context, this guise of scientific research is believable. But in context, the Californios see his visit as suspicious, given everything else happening around them. Texas situation. Now we have the Texas annexation. On May 1846, in Texas, United States General Taylor strategically waited for Mexico to fire the first shots and cause a casualty. Now, this was different from Webster's plan, but precisely how Taylor wanted the Mexican-American War for California to begin. We are seeing the shift from a friendly sale of California to an act of defense. But that's not what happened, or we wouldn't have the Bear Flag Revolt. John Sutter. Next up, we have the polarizing John Sutter. Mexican Governor Juan Bautista Alvarado granted Sutter a huge land grant to keep Russian fur traders, American settlers, and natives away from the northern interior of California. Yet, Sutter intentionally becomes a rest stop for Americans coming over the Sierras and a major trading post for local natives. To be fair, he did keep the Russians from establishing outposts in the area. Sutter lacked a national allegiance to anyone except himself and went about creating a colony within the California province. Seriously, that's what New Helvetica, Sacramento was supposed to be and why he wanted land so far away from anything. He wanted to create his own colony. Even if unrealistic, you have to give Sutter credit for being ambitious. The importance of these two stories is to outline the shift in American strategy to gain possession of California and Sutter's role in welcoming illegally entering Americans into California just prior to the Bear Flag Revolt. Mariano at La Junta. After Sutter, we have Mariano Guadalupe Vallejo. Also like Sutter, Vallejo is warmly welcoming the American immigrants, much to the growing unhappiness of the Mexican government. Vallejo has the authority to deport the immigrants when they enter and stay here illegally, but instead, Vallejo makes their entrance more comfortable. An example of Vallejo's generosity. Vallejo helped Sutter after gaining his vast land grant and also helps several other newcomers with gifted heads of stock and guidance to establish themselves on their new land in their new country. Vallejo strongly believes a United States takeover was in California's best interest, and he does everything he can to maintain friendly relations, and given the favorable treatment he's given to them, he expects the same in return. Now recall, running in parallel with the United States' westward expansion is the Californios' growing exasperation with the Mexican government, a desire to join another country, and their growing annoyance with the new immigrants. Why won't someone do something? It was an uncomfortable time to be a Californio. In May 1846, the original ranchero families of Baja and Alta California from San Diego all the way up to Sacramento, secretly gather in Monterey for a junta, that's an assemblage, to discuss the obvious tensions between Mexico and both Californias. The overall wish is an annexation for Mexico, but which country should take over California is up for discussion and exactly the reason for the secret meeting. A few favor Russia, very few, several favor England for the maritime power, and some France because they are of Latin descent, like Californios. But many, just like Mariano Vallejo, strongly favor a United States annexation. Part two, I guess. Vallejo viewed George Washington as one of the world's greatest figures and looked forward to being in partnership with such a great leader. Vallejo assumes a United States takeover would preserve his military position and influence. Oh dear. Vallejo's words that day:
joined to any European power, California could never hope to be more than a province, a remote stepchild, certain to be overlooked. Only by union with the United States could we hope to be a real part of the great nation. Sooner than anyone thinks, the American continent will be thickly populated from the Atlantic to the Pacific, and of that great country, we Californians must form a part.
Ultimately, Vallejo wasn't wrong, but on that day, his son Plantin Mariano Vallejo wrote, "People in that room laughed at his father's impassioned speech." California's lack of formal plan to invite the inevitable United States takeover, despite the obvious signs the United States was positioning to take California, which was apparent to everyone since the accidental annexation. Even those who favored England or France know the United States is likely to take over California. The importance of this story is, despite the varying opinions regarding which country we would do best under, most Californians know a United States takeover is a matter of when and not if. If there is a time for Californians to create a formal plan with the United States for a friendly takeover, which is what the United States and California is hoping for, this is the time. But neither of those things happen. Thomas Larkin, In Between Worlds. In 1846, while still living in Monterey, Alta California, Thomas Larkin is made a secret agent for the United States while also serving as an American consul in Mexico's Alta California. Larkin's instructions are,
"By all means in your power, continue the goodwill and friendship of the Californios to avoid friction, should the United States occupy California."
The United States wanted a peaceful transfer of sovereignty and an era of goodwill. Larkin is only a U.S. consul for Alta California if California is Mexican territory. If California becomes the United States, he's just a merchant whose business has been dependent on his Mexican and California relationships and friendships. Larkin, for various reasons, wants a peaceful U.S. seizure of California. Amongst those reasons is to maintain his existing business relationships and friendships with everyone. Larkin is walking a fine line. His business relationships and friendships will suddenly become his national enemies once the United States takes possession of California and his work as a secret agent is revealed. Good luck navigating those waters. Thomas Larkin writes a letter to William Heath Davis on April 28, 1846. I'm going to make this my last story in this episode, as it's a pivotal one. Larkin, now a secret agent for the United States, writes to Davis, saying,
"There is likely to be a war, and if Davis flies a neutral flag on his ship, he will do well with trade."
That means don't fly a Mexican flag and don't fly a United States flag on your ship, and both sides will continue to trade with you before, during, and after what is likely to happen. As a secret agent, Larkin is aware war is about to happen and says as much in this letter, providing Davis with advice to stay profitable. Side note, I held this original letter in my hands at the San Francisco Main Library. Amazing, amazing history discussing the upcoming war. The importance of this last story is it shows how Larkin is placed between two worlds as a secret agent for the United States, aware that war is soon to break out in Mexico's California, where his existing business depends on his relationships with Californios. And now to recap. The United States, going back to at least 1841, has expressed an interest in California, specifically their interest in Alta California, and more specifically, their interest in the Yerba Buena Harbor. In parallel, Californios have tired of Mexico's neglect and desire a new, stronger government, even if that means alliance with a new country. California Mexican officials, however, want to stay with Mexico. Manifest Destiny is spreading westward, and despite California's differing opinions regarding which country they should align with, they understand a United States takeover is the most likely outcome. United States immigrants are entering and staying illegally in California, expressing no interest in assimilating to their new land. Sutter and Vallejo are welcoming these new immigrants, upsetting the Mexican government. John Fremont is scouting California, not as secretly as he thinks, on behalf of the United States, and Thomas Larkin, a United States citizen living and doing business in Mexico's Alta California as an American consul, is now also a United States secret agent, providing insider intelligence for the eventual takeover of California while risking his existing business relationships. To the United States, it was certain a Mexican and United States war will soon occur. And if all goes to plan, it will be peaceful in its transfer and retain goodwill with the Mexican government. The majority of Californios want to be under the United States, and even those who don't understand that this is the most likely scenario. Everyone wants a peaceful transfer of power, but we have a bear flag revolt, so something clearly did not go to plan. Stay tuned for the next episode. I am describing parallel storylines that become perpendicular, and trying to pick a few of the most interesting storylines will be hard. Heads up, dear listeners, I will be delayed in releasing next month's episode because I am working on a presentation for the San Francisco Historical Society, which I will be giving on September 13th. I'll be speaking on smuggling in Yerba Buena. You can purchase tickets to watch my presentation in person and see their new museum located in San Francisco's First Branch Mint in the West. And it's just a 3-minute walk from the High Horse and the Wall, just saying. Or you can also stream the presentation live on YouTube. Their website is www.sfhistory.org/events. I also have a direct link to this event in my transcripts. I am really excited and a little nervous about this opportunity, and I need time to research my topic and create the presentation, which is why I probably won't release anything next month. Monkey Block is still here, just taking a month off for a very good reason. Wish me luck. You can read today's transcript and locate the cited sources at monkeyblocksf.buzzsprout.com. Please favorite this podcast wherever you listen to be alerted when new episodes are released. You can visit MonkeyBlock at facebook.com/monkeyblocksf or twitter.com/monkeyblocksf or email me directly at monkeyblocksf@gmail.com. I enjoy hearing from listeners, so reach out. Thank you for listening. This is Monkey Block, retelling forgotten stories from San Francisco's Golden Past.